If you've ever been awake at 2 a.m. wondering whether what you feel for your partner is actually love or whether you're just used to them, scared to start over, attached because you've been together for a decade, you're asking the right question and you're not the only one. Just so you know, you're also Googling it alongside about a million other people every month. So welcome to the club. Here's the answer up front. You can absolutely tell whether what you're feeling is real love. The trick is you're likely looking at the wrong signals and don't realize the questions you're asking yourself are actually coming from fear, not love. You've been told to look for butterflies, certainty, the movie soundtrack feeling. So when those go away or when they were never there to begin with, you start asking, is this it? What if I'm missing my one chance, my soulmate? Maybe I'm being too picky. I don't have butterflies anymore, so this must not be love. What if there's no one else out there? Each one of those questions, every single one, is fear talking. And when fear runs a conversation that's supposed to be about love, you're in deep trouble. So today, I'm going to walk you through what in love really means at the brain level. And a little spoiler, it's not just chemistry. Why fear sounds so much like love, your nervous system can't even tell them apart. The four fear thoughts that masquerade as love and how to spot each one. What real love feels like in your body, and how this should look different at different stages in the relationship so you can tell whether you're in love at the beginning, the middle, if you're in the long-term phase, you know, wherever you are right now. So all of that coming at you, so stay tuned. Welcome to the Relationships Made Easy podcast, where I give you the exact steps to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships, whether it's with your partner, your family, your friends, or most importantly, yourself. I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, psychologist, best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and the bossy Jewish mom you didn't know you needed. Each week, you'll get no-nonsense, research-backed strategies served with humor and love, so you can stop second-guessing yourself and start having the relationships you deserve. You'll always leave knowing exactly what to say and do to shift your relationships for the better. So let's get to it. Welcome back to the podcast. Oh my gosh, we are right at the end of season 8. I have this and one other episode, and then season 8 is done. Thank you for everybody who's been with me all these years. Wow. My seasons are a year long, so it's saying something. I also want to mention that I have a great free download for today called Am I in Love or Just Afraid? So it's like it's pretty much a quick scorecard that'll help you walk through the exact test that I'm going to talk about in your own relationship. So I'll tell you more about it at the end, as well as I have an amazing, if I do say so myself, therapy to go bundle for this episode. Again, I'll talk about all that at the end. All right. So what does in love actually mean? We obviously should start on getting clear on what we're even talking about, because I will say that the cultural definition of being in love is doing you zero favors. You've probably been raised on definition that goes something like, you know, butterflies, can't stop thinking about them, can't eat, can't sleep, the world feels electric, you just know. And romantic comedies have a lot to answer for here. I just want to say, Hollywood, I see you, I'm coming for you. All right. But the brain science tells a different story. And who do I always talk about when I talk about love? My girl crush, biological anthropologist Helen Fisher, who has spent her career mapping the neuroscience of love. And she has really shown that what we call love is actually three different brain systems that evolved for different purposes. I'm going to just say them quickly here. I've done them in previous episodes, but let me give it to you quick. Number one is lust, and that's driven by testosterone and estrogen, and it really pushes you towards sexual connection. The second is romantic attraction, which is driven, these are all driven by different biology. The romantic attraction is driven by dopamine, norepinephrine, and that creates that obsessive, can't stop thinking about them, intense focus on one person type feelings. And then the third is the attachment phase, which is driven by different neurotransmitters and hormones. It's driven by oxytocin and vasopressin, and it creates the deep, sort of settled bond that allows, you know, two people to actually live a life together. So these are all different and should feel different. Now, these three systems can fire together or completely independently of each other. You can lust after someone you're not in love with. You can be in romantic attraction with someone you're not attached to. And here's the big one. You can be deeply attached to someone you're not actually in love with. I'm pausing for dramatic effect. Thank you. You can be deeply attached to someone you're not actually in love with. Let it land. I'm waiting. I'll wait. It's going to come up a lot today, so let it land. So when someone asks me, how do I know if I'm in love? The first thing I want to know is which kind of love we're talking about. Because if you're asking whether you have intense romantic attraction to your partner of 15 years, the honest answer is probably no. And that's not a problem. That dopamine-driven obsession is biologically designed to be temporary. It's designed that way. Most research suggests that intense romantic attraction lasts somewhere between 18 months and 3 years before it shifts into something quieter. And today, whenever I says every day, and I have to say this for the new folks, whenever I talk about the research, if I talk about past episodes I've covered on this topic, if I talk about the free downloads, anything like that, you can find all the links, all the things, all the goodies below the video if you're watching on YouTube. If you are, please like and subscribe. Or on my website at abbymetcalf.com. Just go to this episode. Everything is listed there. I write a full blog for every episode. It's which also means that if you are listening right now and just taking it all in but want to take notes, you don't have to. You can go to the blog later. It's a real written blog. It's not a transcript. It's a blog. And you can go over there and you can copy and paste. You can get all your notes or just save it, do whatever you want. Or if you want to share this with somebody, it's all very easy. Okay, so just because, again, you're maybe attracted, but not, maybe you're, not in love or in love, but not attracted or whatever, it doesn't mean the love is gone. It means that love has matured. There's another neuroscientist I've talked about a lot, Bianca Acevedo, it's probably how you say it. She's worked with Aaron and Fisher. I've talked about Aaron a lot too on the podcast. And they've run these functional MRI studies, fMRI studies on, and one of the most famous ones is they've run it on couples who've been married an average of 21 years and they were self-reporting as still being deeply in love with their partners. Okay. So these are people saying, we're deeply in love and we've been together 25 years. And you're sitting there going, oh, what BS, what bullshit. Like they're not. Well, the brain can't lie. So what she found is that these long-term lovers showed activity in the same dopamine rich brain regions as new lovers. So they were comparing the two groups. They took people who again, just were self-stating, we are still in love and we've been together 25 years. And then, some couple who've been together a year saying we're in love and they were comparing their brains. They looked the same. They look the same. So the people who say they're still in love after 25, they're not lying. They're not lying. I mean, somebody might be that but in general, they're not. And they also, they found this same activity in these dopamine, I don't know how else to say that, kind of dopamine heavy, dopamine rich brain regions, okay? The old lovers and the new lovers. And they found additional activity in the brain's attachment and bonding circuits. So if I'm going to translate that, it's basically neurologically possible to be in love with your partner of two decades. That's what it means. The intensity changes, the quality of the love can deepen, but the love itself is real and the brain confirms it. That's what's so cool about these studies. So we're going to define in love right here, right now. And in love is not a chemical reaction. That's what I want to say first. In love is a state of secure, embodied attachment to someone you genuinely choose, where romantic attraction shows up in different ways at different times. It's not the butterflies or not the butterflies only. It's the body knowing you're safe. It's a feeling, I would tell you, of calm more than anything else. Both when you're physically with the person as well as when you're apart. I know some of you are like, oh, I'm so calm when they're around, but then you get anxious when they're not. That's a problem. Or vice versa, right? You feel really good when they're not around. You're in love. You're thinking about them. You're fantasizing. And then when you're actually with them, you get anxious. There's a problem. And now I'm not saying you don't love this person. I'm not saying you're not in love. I'm saying you have to start telling these things apart and addressing them. Okay. And right now, I want to lay your fears. I am never going to tell you in today's episode to break up with somebody, okay? I am telling you information so you have information so you can work with that and figure out what work you want to do. You know me, I'm always about the hope and I'm always about the, what can we do? You know, what can we do about this? But unless you're honest about what's really happening, when you apply a tool, it's not going to work because it's sort of like you're treating cancer with Tylenol, you know, because I have a fever. Well, okay, but it's because of the cancer, you know. You have to get down to root causes to really affect change with most things, not with every single thing, but with most things. All right. So why do people mistake fear for love, right? That's kind of, it happens a lot. Why, it all the time, actually. And this is really the heart of today's talk. Fear gets confused for love because your nervous system reads urgency as significance. I'm going to say that again. You are confusing fear with love because your nervous system is reading the urgency that you're feeling as significance. And when you can't stop thinking about someone, when your stomach drops if they don't text back, when the thought of them leaving makes you panic, when you can't stop thinking about them, your brain interprets all that activation as proof that this person matters to you in a deep way. But activation isn't love. I say with love. Activation is not love. Activation is a sympathetic nervous system fight or flight response. It's hypervigilance. It's the same physiological state you'd be in if a tiger walked into your room. Your nervous system can't distinguish between this person is the love of my life and this person represents a threat to my emotional safety. Both register as alarm, which is why you stay in those sick relationships sometimes and feel, again, kind of addicted to the person. Well, I've talked about love as an addiction before and all that, and I'll link to those in the show, in the blog post. And this is where polyvagal theory becomes really essential. And I know, is everyone's going to think I just have a crush on Stephen Porges, but I don't. It's just, you know, but it's his polyvagal theory again. It's everywhere. If you're a longtime listener, you've heard me reference it just about, I mean, so many episodes. And it's for good reason, though. It's that important. And it's the closest thing to a kind of a unified field theory, you know, of why we feel what we feel in relationships that we've got right now. So that's why I reference it all the time. Polyvagal theory describes how your nervous system has different states that govern how you experience the world and the people in it. Okay. So one of those states is when your ventral vagal system is online. When that's happening, you feel safe, you feel connected, you feel present. That's the state real love lives in. But when your sympathetic nervous system is online, you feel activated, you feel urgent, you feel on edge. Even if you label that feeling as intensity or chemistry, it doesn't matter. Okay. The reason this matters is a huge percentage of people in unhealthy or maybe I'll call them unaligned relationships. If you don't want to call your relationship unhealthy, you can call it because it's the truth. It could be just unaligned. You're not lined up. The vast majority of people interpret their sympathetic activation as proof of love. Oh, we just have, I hear you. We just have such a strong connection. I've never felt this way about anyone. It's so intense between us. And I'm not saying sometimes that intensity isn't real love. Sometimes it is, sure. And sometimes it's your nervous system in a state of chronic threat dressed up in romantic clothes. Okay. And there's a cultural piece I mentioned before I want to name again here because it's real and it's gendered. We've been handed a script, and I say we, I mean women. So I know there's a lot of men who listen. Thank you for being here. But I do need to say this. There's a script that women get that's different than what men get. And yes, it's the patriarchy talking that says that good partners are scarce, that being alone is the worst possible outcome for a woman because it used to be because we couldn't, you know, have a bank account or own a home or get educated. So yeah, it used to be the worst thing ever. It's not anymore. And but we still have the script running, and that women, you should be grateful for whatever attention you receive, and that holding out for actual love is greedy or unrealistic. I say this as a cynical New Yorker who's been watching the script run for, you know, 40 years now and is still waiting for it to be retired. When that scarcity script is running in your head, fear of being alone gets dressed up again in love's clothes all the time. I love them becomes the socially acceptable way to say, I'm terrified there's no one else. Those are not the same statement. And you're going to learn how to tell them apart right now. Okay. That's what I'm doing here today. So I know I'm giving you the hard love. I hope it's not hard. I hope I'm giving you I'm just giving you love because I love you and I want you to get this because it's so, so important. We know that, your relationships predict your happiness level, the level of peace and fulfillment, all the goodies that you get in your relationship. Relationships, it's not just your romance, but predict your happiness level. But because we tend to live with our romantic partners or spend most of our time with them, these are in a high prediction for life satisfaction category. And that's why this is so important, because I want you to find fulfillment and peace and happy and all the good and joy and expansion and all the good things. Okay. So what are the four fear motivators that look like love, right? And again, I've been doing this work with couples, with individuals, 40 years, people, 40 years. I still do it. And I can tell you there are, so to me, they boil down to what I call four fear thoughts. These are the ones that I hear the most from people who insist they're in love, but probably suspect they're not in love or they're asking the question. And to me, each one is diagnostic. So even if one of these is doing the heavy lifting in your relationship, I don't care what you're calling love is doing some other emotional work. So I want to go through them. So in other words, you might have one of these or all four. It doesn't matter. Like, it's really worth paying attention to. The first fear dressed up as love is I don't want to be alone. I think is the most common one and the most disguised. Loneliness is a real and important signal. It is your nervous system telling you that connection matters and that you're wired for it, which you are. But I don't want to be alone is not the same as I want to be with this specific person. So I have my clients try this kind of this swap. This is an honest swap. Instead of I love them, try saying I don't want to be alone, and being with them means I'm not. And if the second sentence feels truer than the first, you've got information. Again, you don't have a reason to leave, but you have information. I did a whole episode on why we're so afraid to be alone and the five steps. I think it's five steps to feel at ease with yourself or whatever. So if this fear, if this is doing a lot of work in your relationship, go back and listen to that one because I think it pairs perfectly with this. And I did another one on different kind of, you know, why. About just loneliness in general, I'll link to both of those because I really think you should listen. If this one's popping out at you, it's time to go read or listen to those. All right. So the second fear that I hear is what if there's no one else out there? This is the scarcity script. It's a lie. And I'm going to be bossy about this one because it's killing you and it's making me crazy when you say things like this. Can I say with love? There are 8 billion people on the planet. There is not mathematically only one possible match for you. The scarcity story is fear talking, and it's usually loudest when the relationship you're currently in isn't actually working for you. Real love doesn't need scarcity to justify itself. I'm going to say that again. Real love doesn't need scarcity to justify itself. If you're saying that, right? Like, I've never felt this way, right? You know, there's no one else out there. I know it. I've dated a lot, Abby. You don't understand. That should not be the reason you're with this person. You don't stay with someone because they're your only option. You stay because given 1,000 options, you'd still choose them. And I know you wouldn't, because I talk to you sometimes and I ask, so if there was this other person, and that's why you try dating other people when you're with this person, you do it all the time. You go on the other dates because you're trying to find someone better so you can let them go. But what happens often is you don't, because it's so quick and you're still really hooked to the other person. So you haven't really let them go when you're trying to date. So forget it. No one's going to, you know, float your boat. But it reinforces the fear. It reinforces the, oh my gosh, I know I see you. My clients do it all the time. My friends do it. I know. You go on a date. You're like, I'll just try to date. And I was miserable, Abby, on the dates. They were terrible, or I couldn't meet anybody, you know, this person starts to look better out of that. That should never be. Or I have clients who got divorced and now they're with someone new who kind of sucks, but they're better than their ex. So they're like, no, that is not the bar. Am I yelling? I'm yelling a lot. Sorry. I get upset. Sorry, not sorry. I really, this is such important information. Please listen like you're wrong. Listen like I am giving you the gospel and you're wrong about all the things you've thought. And see what happens in, you know, how you listen to what I'm giving you and how you allow maybe some of your defensiveness to go down so you can hear what I'm saying. Because it's your life and your life's important. Number three, another favorite is, what if they find someone better and they're happy and then I'm alone? Oof. Woof. This one is fear of comparison and fear of regret all bundled together. It's also, and here's the kicker, entirely about you, not about them. Notice that the thought isn't, oh, I want them to be happy. It's, I don't want them to be happy without me. That's not love. That's not love. That's ownership. It's attachment to your role in their life and a deep belief that someone else's happiness is a referendum on your worth. Real love can want someone's happiness even in scenarios that don't include you. I know that's a tall order, right? If you're listening, I am not babying you. I am not, that's the bar. Okay, there it is. And yeah, I've done it. You can do it. I've done it. Lots of people do it. Number four, and equally as important as all the rest, I've already put in so much time. I don't want to start all over again, Abby. Oh, this is the sunk cost fallacy in romantic clothing. I keep saying clothing. I'm very into clothing today. Okay. This is very, very famous. The sunk cost fallacy is very behavioral economists, Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky. I do believe they have the Nobel Prize for this. Documented decades ago that humans systematically overweight what they've already invested in when deciding whether to continue something. Okay. So the years you've put in are real and they matter, but they're not a reason to stay. They're a reason to be honest with yourself about what those years actually built. If what they built is a relationship you'd still choose today, knowing what you know now, that's love. That's great. If what they built is a habit, an entanglement, shared bills, a shared mortgage, a calendar of shared logistics, that's something else, my friend. And it might be something you can grow from, but it's not love yet. So again, here's the test. If you stripped these four fears out of your motivation to stay, would you still want to be there? If yes, you're likely in love. God be with you. Go have a nice day. If the only reasons you came up with start with what if or I don't want to, you know, I don't think you're in a love relationship. You're in a fear relationship that's using love language. And fear, I promise you, has never made a love relationship or any relationship better. Fear keeps you small. It keeps you stuck. It keeps you accepting less than you're actually capable of receiving. Again, I'm not saying you need to break up with this person today. So stop. Don't panic. Stop. Take a breath. Breathe. Breathe with me. Breathe. I'm saying that you need to take a step back and do some work. I'm saying that you need to get real about what's going on. Okay. So
I've always made every episode of this podcast with one idea in mind, to over-deliver. I want you to walk away thinking, I would have paid for that. I can't believe it's free. And in all the years I've done this show, as you know, I have never taken on a sponsor. But when Quince asked to be my very first, I said an enthusiastic yes, because Quince does exactly what I do. They over-deliver. Cashmere without cashmere prices, real washable silk, all the elevated stuff you and I love without the markup we all hate. And I'm talking 50 to 80% less than you can find anywhere else. And I'll just say it, I love an obvious bargain. I live just outside San Francisco where the summers are more of a rumor than a season, so I wear their cashmere sweaters year-round. But there's way more than cashmere, of course. So make your summer wardrobe feel easier. Go to quince.com/RME for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/RME, which stands for Relationships Made Easy, for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/RME. The person who edited the episode you're listening to right now, I found him on Upwork 8 years ago, and he is still my guy. Same goes for the person who keeps my website from falling apart. Truly, I couldn't run my business without them, and they're the first place I go the second my plate feels too full. So when Upwork asked about sponsoring the show, it was a very easy yes. And that's true personally too, not just professionally. Upwork isn't only for entrepreneurs. A while back, I somehow agreed to run my kids' school auction. Yeah, why did I say yes to that? And I hired an assistant through Upwork who made the whole thing painless and barely cost me anything. So whether you're scaling a business or you're an overwhelmed parent staring down a school project, Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. It's free to sign up and posting a job is easy. So visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com. Are you with me? Are you okay? Do you need it? Do you need a hug? I can't give you a hug from here. I would if I could. So what does real love actually feel like in your body, right? Let's get into the affirmative side. What are you looking for? What does it feel like when love is the actual thing, not fear, you know, in costume? I'm going to keep using the clothing metaphor. So here, this is kind of a diagnostic I use with my clients all the time. And it's simple, but I think it's revealing. When I ask someone why they love their partner, the answer tells me almost everything I need to know. If the answer comes back vague and chemistry driven, there's just something about them. We just talked for hours that first night. They've got this charisma I can't explain. The connection is electric. I've never felt like this before. I've never met someone like this before. Ugh, that's just trauma bond language, not love language. It is. I'm sorry. Trauma bonding, I've talked about it before, is the deep emotional attachment that forms in the presence of intermittent reinforcement, of intensity, of unresolved nervous system activation. And it produces the same can't stop thinking about them feelings that real love does. Your brain doesn't distinguish, of course, well between those two, which is why so many of you stay stuck in something you can't name. Real love sounds different. When I ask someone in a healthy, loving relationship why they love their partner, the first answer, not the later answers once you've been prompted and poked at, the first answer is specific and behavioral. I mean, so be honest with yourself when you answer this. If you notice that the first response that comes up is there's just something about them, I've never felt this way before, that's your, I'm not saying you couldn't come up with more later. I'm saying that first thing is the problem. What I hear in healthy relationships is something like, because they always have my back. Because they argue fair, even when they don't agree with me, they argue fair because they're so kind. They're generous. I watch them with the waiter when we're out to eat, with me, with my kids, whatever. They're really kind. Kindness is their first response because they listen when I'm upset and they ask questions because they show up when they say they will, because they make me laugh on the regular. It's a list of qualities and actions, not a fog of feeling.
It's a list of qualities and actions, not a fog of feeling. Notice the difference because it's pretty stark. So the next time you go to answer that question, listen to what comes into your brain first and what comes out of your mouth. Are you describing a person or are you describing a sensation? Are you describing a person or are you describing a sensation? Real love feels like safety in the literal nervous system sense. When you're with this person, your body settles instead of activating. Your shoulders drop. Your breathing gets fuller. You can take up space, disagree, be unattractive, be cranky, be wrong, and the relationship doesn't crack at all. That, my friend, is ventral vagal connection, like I talked about before. And it's the gold standard. And if you've never felt this before, please don't be discouraged. You know, a lot of times we're wired for chaos and you're going to misread safety as boredom the first few times you encounter it. We'll get there, but I'm just telling you what happens. And I'll also say you feel all this when you're away from the person or with the person. This is equally important. Okay? Equally important. Real love also makes you more yourself, not less of yourself. I've talked about Susan Johnson before on the podcast. She developed emotionally focused therapy, EFT. She's written really extensively about how secure attachment works to expand a person's capacity, not constrict it. I always think of love that way. Love is bigger. You're lit up. You're expansive. When you're truly in love with someone in a healthy way, you don't lose your friends, your interests, your sense of who you are. You actually become a fuller version of yourself because you've got someone in your corner. If you're shrinking inside the relationship or trying to hide your success or some parts of yourself, again, not love. That's some other dynamic that needs naming, right? Real love is reciprocal. Both people are showing up. Both people are contributing. Both people are willing to do the uncomfortable work of repair when something goes sideways. If you're the only one putting in effort or you're always, here's the biggie, this I see too, you're the one always leading change. You're the one always making the appointment for the couples therapist or the one always asking for them to read this book or the one always asking, you know, for whatever. What you're feeling isn't love probably. It's caretaking. It's hope. It's attachment. And those are different animals. They are. I'm not saying there's not some love mixed in there, but there's other things that are more dominant. Okay. Another question I get asked a lot is, do you have to have things in common to really be in love? And this is the question I love answering. And because it's really a place where a lot of damage can happen, because somewhere along the line, you got handed the idea that to be in love means you should both like the same activities, the same foods, want to do the same things on a Saturday, share hobbies, agree on travel destinations, and basically be each other's best activity buddies. And the idea is, to put it mildly, such crap, bullshit, ridiculous nonsense. I can't even. I did an episode on this years ago, and the research still holds up because I looked it up again. And there was I talked about it in that, and I'll link to that episode. It's about opposites attracting. But there was a meta-analysis done by Montoya and Horton. Anyway, they looked at over 250 studies on partner similarity. So the 240 studies, so the group, the participants is huge, tens of thousands of people. And they found that similar partnerships did score highest in longevity and overall satisfaction, but the similarities that mattered weren't about shared interests. That wasn't the thing. They were about values, attitudes, personality traits, and then a separate large-scale study was done at Cambridge and looked, again, I'll link to all these, and it looked at the digital footprints of thousands of couples and friends. And again, confirmed that people do partner with similar people in friendships and relationships, but the similarity is at the level of who someone is, not what they do for fun. So the translation there is that you can have absolutely nothing to do in common and still be a great fit. You know, I've talked about Gary and I a ton about this. The list of activities we both enjoy is pretty short. We both like dinner. That's about it. Even, you know what? Gary's not even that interested in dinner. I'm not sure if we have that. But our values line up almost exactly. We share a sense of humor incredibly. Maybe it's the New York. We're both from New York originally. We parent similarly. We hold certain ideals as sacred. We feel safe with each other. We trust each other's integrity, competence, and goodwill, which if you, again, my longtime listeners know, you recognize that. That's the trust triad framework. The trust triad, again, means you trust that your partner is three things. Honest with you, that's the integrity. Can actually do what they say they'll do and repair when they mess up. That's the competence. And they act with your well-being in mind. They have your back. That's the goodwill. When those three are present, you can be wildly different in your hobbies and still have a deeply connected life together. And I would even argue a better relationship than most. Okay. And I think I've shared before that I had a couple I worked with years ago who met training for a marathon, for a famous marathon, like a long, you know, real marathon. And they met in very early training. They fell in love. They trained together for a year and they did this thing and they got married and what a train wreck. The only time they weren't fighting was when they were out jogging. Was the only time they weren't fighting. They had, and you would have thought, because they certainly had the same nutrition, same ideas about working out and goals and ambition. You know, of course, they were both very ambitious people. They had a lot in common that way. Like they both, you know, put a lot of energy into their work. So all these things looked perfectly aligned in the beginning. And then I got to tell you, they had no values that were the same after that. It was not good. So if you're questioning your love because you don't like to jog and they do, or you're a homebody and they're an extrovert, or you love opera and they love football, that's not the love test. The love test is the values test, the humor test, the safety test, and the team test. Are you on the same team? I say it a lot. Do you laugh at the same things? Do you treat each other well when no one's watching? Do you want similar things out of a life? Those are the alignments that matter, not the other stuff. The other stuff's nice, sure. If you have it, great. But that is not what you need to do. So how do you know you're in love at different stages of a relationship, right? So let's talk about that. Because in love, as I already said, doesn't mean the same thing in month three as it does in year three or year 30, okay? So I want to break it down by stage. They usually talk about this in three stages, the researchers. Stage one is the early dating. That's the first 6 months to 2 years. 2 years is up to 2 years is considered early dating. This is romantic attraction territory. Neurochemically, this is when all that's happening. You'll feel obsessive. You'll feel energized, possibly a little crazy. That is normal. The question at that stage isn't whether you feel intensity. The question is whether alongside the intensity, you also feel safe, you feel respected, and like you can be yourself. If the intensity is the only thing holding you together and you're anxious between contacts or scanning for signs they don't care, or performing your best self instead of relaxing into who you are, you know, right? We're probably talking about limerence or anxious attachment. And I did a whole, I did a whole episode on the difference between limerence and love. I would say that's worth checking out if this resonates, by the way, so I'll link to that. But real love at this stage, it feels exciting and grounding, both at once. And then we got stage two, right? This is the established partnership stage. And this is year two to about year 10 or so. This is the dopamine fireworks. This is when the dopamine fireworks have settled stage, okay? This is the settling of the dopamine stage. You're no longer staying up until 3 a.m. texting them about everything you've, you know, ever thought. You know each other's parents, the way each of you handles stress, who does the dishes, who handles the bills, who's the planner, who's the dreamer, right? You know all that. The question at this stage is whether the underlying current of warmth, of choosing, of reciprocity is still there. Do you still light up when they walk into the room, even a little? Do you want to know what they think? Are you still building a life together, or are you running parallel logistics in the same house? Real love at this stage feels like, how do I want to say this? To me, it feels like a deep, settled appreciation. The intensity goes underground, but it's still really flowing. Okay. And then we got stage three, right? Us long haul folks. Long haul love. This is decade plus, okay? And this is where Acevedo's research really, to me, becomes extremely relevant, okay, which I mentioned earlier with the functional MRIs comparing long-term and couples with newly in love couples. Long, and I keep saying married, I apologize, you know, long together couples. I have no issue with you not being married if you're together a long time. It's all the same to me. It's kind of like you are for my intents and purposes, except you did for some, you know, whatever reason, don't have a piece of paper. I could care less. So long married couples who report still being in love show brain activity that combines romantic attraction circuits with those deep attachment circuits. Okay, it combines them. So basically what this means in practice is that you can absolutely still be in love with someone after 20 or 30 years. It looks like a kind of like a quiet pride in who they are, a real interest in their inner life, a willingness to keep choosing them through the, you know, unsexy stuff, which comes illness, parenting, midlife reckonings, aging parents, you know, my ass is not where it used to be, you know, all that, right? The works. And a sense that your life is generally better with them in it. Okay. Now, if on the other hand, you're mostly coexisting, mostly maybe even avoiding each other, and the only reason you're still there is the four fears I already covered, again, that's not love. That's a habit. And again, I'm not saying you have to leave. I'm saying you have to be honest about what you're in so you can address it in whatever way you want to. Okay. So let's go there. What if you realize you're not actually in love? So, all right. Okay. So let's say you've been listening and you're now landing somewhere uncomfortable. Maybe you're realizing that fear is doing more of the heavy lifting than love is. Maybe you can't honestly say you'd still choose this person if the four fears were stripped out, right? Okay, don't panic. Just hang in here with me for a minute. Okay, don't panic. So first things first, this is information, not a verdict. I'm going to say it again. With all the love in my heart, full front. This is information, not a verdict. Realizing you're in a fear relationship doesn't automatically mean the relationship has to end. It means you have to be honest, and that honesty is the only place real change starts. So some relationships can move from fear-based to love-based once both people are willing to do the work, address what's actually missing, and you know, and stop pretending. Some can't, but either way, you're not going to know what's possible until you stop performing love and start telling the truth. Or maybe you at least know the truth and you choose to stay. That's okay too, and you can stop holding this person to something they can't give you, and you can start accepting where you are and finding love in all the other places you can find love. That's okay too. Second, don't make any decisions from a dysregulated state. If you're anxious, panicked, in fight or flight, you know, as you're hearing this, that's the worst possible time to evaluate your relationship. Do not do that. Take a walk. Sleep on it. Get yourself back to a calm, grounded place before you draw any conclusions. If you don't already have a daily mindfulness practice, this is your sign. Free mindfulness starter kit. I'll have it linked, please. Third, if the answers you're getting are scary, that again, it's a sign that you're finally listening. Maybe you've spent years explaining away what you knew on some level. Coming back into contact with the truth, it's uncomfortable, but it's the entry point for any real change, right? In this relationship or the next one, it doesn't matter. So let me wrap up. I'm going to tell you about the free download and the Therapy to Go bundle and all the goodies. Here's the bottom line. Love and fear can both be present at once, especially in long relationship. You're human. It's okay. But if fear is the foundation, what you're calling love is something else. Again, real love is identifiable. It feels safe in your body. It makes you more of yourself, not less. It's reciprocal. It shows up on, you know, on a Tuesday and a Friday, and it's built on shared values, on humor, on trust, not on shared hobbies or shared fear of being alone. Okay, you don't need to be opposites who attract or twins with the same Spotify playlist. You don't have to be either of those. You need to be on the same team, telling each other the truth and choosing each other freely. Again, with trust in place. Remember the latter. You have trust, and that's how you can then have vulnerability, and that's the only pathway to emotional intimacy. That's the only ladder there. I'm sorry. There's no other way around it. And if you don't have trust, if this person has called you out your name, has, God forbid, physically hurt you in any way, has gone back and forth, you know, that intermittent reinforcement, you know, all the loving stuff, but then they undermine you or you get in a fight, you know, they really hurt you or whatever. If that keeps going back and forth, you don't have trust. So you have to start there. And again, if you can do the others that I just said, you know, you're in love. If you can't, you have important work to do. And the worst thing you can do for yourself is keep calling fear love. Right? You know, trust your body, trust that you can have the real thing. You don't have to settle for a fear relationship dressed up in, you know, the love clothes, because I love the clothing thing, right? Okay. So here's a reminder that, so the free download for today is Am I in Love or Just Afraid? Again, it's like a quick scorecard that'll help walk you through this test, you know, that I've, all the stuff I just mentioned in your own relationship. And if you've been anxious or nodding your head this whole time, you might want to pick up, I Say With Love, today's Therapy to Go bundle. These are $10, so they're just 10 bucks. And it and I'm very proud of them. It's therapy to go. You could do it with a therapist if you have one. And if you don't have a therapist, this will give you a lot of information and really help you move through whatever this is. So I always include the free download in the Therapy to Go bundle, so you don't have to download it twice, okay? And then there are the four fear motivators inventory, right? So you can find out where fear is hiding in your reasons to stay kind of thing. The second is a compatibility map. So what actually matters in a lasting partnership? Then there are journaling prompts, right? What love has meant to you before, what it means now, all that. Then there's something I'm calling the pattern inventory. It's like a bird's eye view of love and fear across your relationship. And then last is like a daily tracker. It's like 2 weeks of watching for real love or fear in your daily life. It's going to help you do that. So all of that is in the bundle. I know I over deliver every bundle. You're welcome to get that or just the free download. See if you like it. And if you do, maybe then get the bundle. It's up to you. All right. That is it. I really want to thank everyone who wrote in. I had a lot of people ask about this question, a lot of people. And so I really appreciate whenever you do that. Again, I really appreciate this podcast so much and being here with you. It as always is my favorite part of the week. Oh, love you so much. I know I was very emphatic today. A lot of energy because I feel a lot of energy. Love to me is a real important thing. When I say I love you, I mean it. You and I are in a reciprocal relationship, right? Think about that. What do you get from me? What are you here for? I hope I'm always trying to model that, which is one of the reasons I say to you, hey, to be reciprocal, right? Not just to receive information from me. I got like leave a review for the podcast or share something with somebody, share something I've written with someone or follow me on TikTok or whatever, or Instagram, right? Or you can buy something to support me too. Any of those things are giving back to me in our reciprocal relationship. Send me an email thanking me, whatever. Sending me an email with ideas is part of a reciprocal relationship. Like we're joined together in this. My feelings for you are real and your feelings for me become real when you engage in the reciprocity, right? They do, don't they? I know we see it a lot in my One Love Collective. It's amazing over there. I'm in there every day, pretty much. I love it in there. And I love our feeling of community in there on Substack. Amazing. And it's because, again, we're modeling all these great ideas and helping, you know, each other. I'm in there helping each other be even better at this thing we call relationships. So, all right, that is it. Mwah. I do love you so much. Thank you for being here with me. And I'm going to talk to you, oh my God, the last episode for this season coming up next week. Thank you for spending time with me today. If you're loving what you're learning here, come join my One Love Collective. It's my private community where we take these conversations even deeper. You'll get a ton of bonus content, live Q&As with me, guided visualizations, journaling prompts, scripts, and an incredible community of like-minded people ready to support you as you create more ease and joy in all your relationships. It's all waiting for you at abbymetcalf.com or right on Substack. I'll see you next week.